This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome back to another edition of The Week in Review on Heritage Radio Network. My name is Jack Inslee. I'm the executive producer here at the station, and I'm joined by the one and only Aaron Fairbanks, the executive director of Heritage Radio Network. How are you today, Aaron?
I am good. I'm excited for the show. I got a lineup of good stuff for you guys.
Tons of good stuff. I'm excited for spring. I feel like we're inching our way there here.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like everyone's having the, like, what do I wear outside today moment. Yeah. So today I just decided to wear all the coats. I have them all on. So whatever happens, I'm ready.
Better safe than sorry, right?
Exactly.
So on this program, if you're a first-time listener, we try to distill the week of programming here at Heritage Radio, which is very wide and varied, into a little 25-minute digestible package for you here. And what we like to do every week is start off with our last great bite that we ate personally. Aaron, I'll let you kick this one off.
So I am really excited that we're going to be heading down to the Charleston Food and Wine Festival next week. But one of the things I'm a little sad about is it does mean we will be missing Back 40 West annual Cassoulet Explosion that happens here in the city. It's one of my favorite events of the year. Peter Hoffman puts together this amazing lineup of chefs, and everyone comes with their own take on Cassoulet, the classic French kind of bean and sausage and pork dish. And I had to get a little bit of a fix. So I was at Back 40 West earlier this week, chowing down. It's one of the only restaurants in the city that has like an actual working fireplace that they cook in the restaurant, which makes for some like really delicious stuff. And one of my favorite things that's always a part of the Cassoulet situation is a fireplace creme brulee. So they actually brulee the creme brulee with an old school tamper that they actually put. So they put it in the fire. It's like a little piece of metal that sits in the fire, gets super hot, and they like tap it around the top of the brulee to caramelize and get that like nice crispy crust. And I won't be eating all the delicious cassoulet that's happening on Sunday, March 6th. I did stop by to get a little bit of fireplace action. So that is my long-winded last great bite. For folks who are here in the city, go eat cassoulet. They have an amazing lineup. Heat author Bill Buford, longtime friend of the network, Shauna Pacifico, who's over at Extra Fancy now. Our Bushwick neighbor, Jessica Wilson, over at Dear Bushwick. And then Adam Gopnik of The New Yorker will be there kind of offering commentary and on the dish. I don't know what exactly that's
like
going to mean,
though,
but
so
Adam is cool. So like go eat cassoulet for me and then report back on whose cassoulet was best, because I got to know.
Nice. I have dropped the ball cooking at home this week.
One of those weeks.
But I did have a very, very delicious Senegalese dinner at Jollof over in our hood in Bed-Stuy.
Nice.
Love that place. Went over, had the tabougine with Jollof rice, which is like the kind of Senegalese national dish, like a baked fish. Always really, really, really good food there. If you're in Brooklyn or Bed-Stuy and you haven't been to Jollof, you should make it a priority. Have you been, Erin?
I have been, but not as recently as I should have been. And
okay.
So, you know what? I'm like, I'm going to go this weekend. That
yeah,
sounds
right?
good.
There
yeah.
you go. Boom. There
Who's
it is.
Who's with me? Come at me, Bed-Stuy. Let's do this.
Let's move to the studio for some clips from the week. In this part of the program, we like to play you some clips from the week of programming here at Heritage Radio Network. With over 35 shows a week, there's plenty to choose from every week. So this is a very small sampling of what we've got going on here. Well, we're going to kick it off with a little clip about maple syrup, which it's like becoming the season, right, Aaron?
Coming into this season, that's what they need to get the sugar the sap flowing. You need freezing nights and warm days, and it creates that like magical thing that really only happens in a very specific part of the world here in the north, east, up in Canada, and a few spots in Germany. But maple syrup is produced in a very limited region, and we are lucky enough to be smack dab in the middle of one of them.
Yes, and Michael Harlan Turkell on the food scene, most recently episode 271, he had on guest Casey Elsass, who's the founder of Bushwick Kitchen, and they're also makers of various honey and maple products, and Casey kind of went and gave some interesting tips on using maple syrup, so let's just check that out.
But what it gives you is a really crispy, crispy French fry, so then when you put the gravy on top, it soaks in, but those fries still stay pretty crisp and really like take in that liquid of the gravy. But then on top, there's a maple candied bacon, which has some mustard in it. So it has the kind of acidic and a sweet with the smoky bacon flavor, plus the cheese curds, plus the gravy, plus the French fries. It's like the ultimate drunk snack.
Yeah. I feel like you wrote this book or you are a maple connoisseur, putting these recipes together, not just like, oh, I'm creative, I'm a good cook. It's like, no, I really do want maple all the time. You have to figure out how to put it in every recipe.
Yeah. Well, more recipes didn't make the book than made the book.
Yeah.
And my mistake in...
So the book we're talking about here is called Short Stack Editions Maple Syrup, which is obviously an ode to maple syrup and includes tons and tons of recipes using it.
I felt myself getting a little chubbier as he was explaining those French fries.
Yeah, really.
I'm a big fan of cooking with maple syrup. In savory preparations in particular, I think one of the things that people don't often know about maple syrup or maple sugar is that it has a very high burn rate, so you can cook it at a much higher heat than you can with cane sugar or beet sugar. So it's great for it's great with meat. It's great for any type of like barbecue. And we are actually, you know, like we said, we're coming into maple syrup season. So I would highly recommend if you are in the Northeast, get yourself up to a sugar shack. The folks up in Thurman County, they have a wonderful kind of setup going called Thurman Maple Days. You can find out more at ThurmanMapleDays.com. But one of the cool things is the tours they put together, you can see very old school sugar shacks where they're using kind of wood-fired stills to reduce the sap and make the syrup. But then you can also on the other side see the very most kind of like modern technology in maple production where they use machines that do things like reverse osmosis, which sounds very science and techy, but ultimately it's like they put it through a filter. And it's just a really cool opportunity to get up and to like eat some delicious pancakes and maple syrup, but also to really see this super special thing that, like I said at the top, only happens in this part of the world. It's super cool. So that's ThurmanMapleDays.com. Definitely check them out. Great weekends coming up in March. So plan a trip.
Yeah. Note to self, have breakfast before week in review. Like, you're killing me with
all
this.
Yeah, my like one piece of peanut butter toast is not cutting it.
Oh my goodness. Moving on to a few things with Claire and Erica, which is a really fun show that we do on Wednesdays. These two ladies run Of A Kind, which is an online marketplace for emerging designers, and they have been kicking off their kind of like radio book club, which is a really fun idea. And let's take a little listen into what they've been talking about.
This is the first installment of our book club.
Yes.
We are discussing Lily King's Euphoria. And we
such a good book.
Okay, so one of the things that we really loved about this book is the main character, who is this really strong, kind of defiant woman, Nell, who...
Obsessed with her.
Who is based on Margaret Mead, and who's just very strong-willed and...
She's just a total badass. Also, yeah. Like, remember, this is 1930s, and she's not only at the top of her game and the top of her industry. It's, I don't know if you can call it an industry. That's probably not the right
word.
Well,
she's a writer, so yeah, she's a book in the book-selling industry,
yeah, she's
least.
The most famous... anthropologist around, which is awesome, and going places that women don't typically go, and it's sort of part, you know, a big part of the book is that her husband is clearly so jealous of her, and that creates a lot of the tension between the two of them, because she's had
oh man, I gotta give a big up for my girl Margaret Mead. I love Claire and Erica, even though I think they're actually both younger than me. I like to think of them as the like cool older sisters that I never had. They just have like such a great taste. And I feel like listening to that show every week, it's like, it's stuff like this. It's things that are like right in my kind of wheelhouse of like, oh yeah, I have been meaning to read that book or taste that, you know, product or go to that place. But then there's also this whole collection of stuff where I was like, I wasn't even thinking about that, but now I'm totally thinking about that.
Yeah, no, same for me. Every time I listen to the show, she's like, me and my husband, you know, when we don't have that much time, we love to make Marcella Hazan's tomato sauce. I'm like, that's what I like to do. It's
you're like, Claire and Erica, they're just like us.
Yeah. definitely a fun show, though, and I'm excited that they're kicking off the book club. It's a great idea for radio, and Erin, I know you're reading a lot lately, too. Maybe you can send them over some recommendations.
Oh, my God, I have the list are long. My goal for 2016 is to read, or better, more accurately, to have read to me, because I'm a big Audible fan, a book a week. And so I've been really hitting that mark. So I have actually lots of book feelings that I'm excited to discuss with the ladies.
Excellent. I know you also have a lot of feelings about leap year.
I feel like I keep thinking about leap year. I'm like, I want to do something really special. I want to make it a moment that counts. It only happens once every 4 years. I've like some kind of like magic or crystals or something's going to happen on the 29th. But I haven't really figured out what.
Well, you know, imagine if you had a birthday on leap year. How crazy would that be?
I'd be like literally, how old would I be right now? I'm 36, so I'd be 9.
What do you do? I guess you just like celebrate on the day before or after. I guess you could probably choose. If you're a cheater like that, yeah, true. So I thought what would be fun for leap year is going back into the time capsule and listening to a little clip from leap year 2012, the last time we enjoyed a leap year. So this is a clip from Taste Matters, which is a show that's not currently active. We hope maybe someday soon it will be again.
Come back, guys.
This is a show hosted by Mitchell Davis, who's the vice president of the James Beard Foundation, a really, really fun and brilliant guy. And actually, funny enough, this week he had a guest host who's Isabella Wojcik, who also works at the Beard Foundation. And they were chatting with our friend Chef Jonathan Sawyer, who we've done some work with. And I've gotten to eat at his restaurant in Cleveland. He owns Noodle Cat in the Greenhouse Tavern there. He's kind of like the Cleveland guy. And yeah, let's take a little trip through the time portal to leap year 2012. Check out Taste Matters.
But tell me, how can a customer, beyond just going to your restaurant, I mean, what kinds of things can customers do to put that kind of pressure on chefs and restaurants, or that responsibility on chefs and restaurants that you talked about? I mean, what are the ways that we can do that?
I mean, I think that the way that you said it was perfect. You know, it is up to the customers and ultimately the American public to put the pressure on the restaurants, on the chefs, on the chains, on the purveyors to answer the questions that need to be answered. You know, there's nothing wrong with going out to eat at a restaurant, even if it's not mine, and asking who the farmer is who procured or stewarded the pork that's on your plate. And there's nothing wrong with asking where the eggs came from. And I think that's the tip of the iceberg when it comes to education for families and consumers and diners out. And I think the more that you read, the more you experience, and the more your open book you are as a consumer, the better off the restaurants are going to be. Mm-hmm. And the end result, hopefully, is that through this education and through understanding how chefs source ingredients and how farmers do things sustainably, you vote with your dollars. And at the end, the dollars should end up at the restaurants that are doing things that ensure a bright future for everybody and not just looking for their own benefit.
Preach.
Yeah, still prescient today, right? Like, very relevant.
I feel like that could have been an episode from yesterday, which makes me feel actually like good and bad at the same time.
Yeah, right. It's like, have we evolved, or I mean, are we just still on the right page of thinking?
Well, I think always engaging, asking questions, being curious, and pushing for the things that you believe in. Like, come on, that's just like how you want to live life.
Yeah, voting with your dollar across the board, right?
Yeah. Speaking of voting, if you are not registered to vote, get on it, people. We got a big election coming up.
Oh, my goodness. Could do a whole segment about that Republican debate I watched last night.
No comment.
Oof. With that, maybe we should change the pace here and move to the breakdown.
We'll be right back.
And welcome to The Breakdown, where we kind of go deeper into a topic or a theme or an item in the news, any number of things. And this week, we're jumping into the tech space with the host of Tech Bytes. Aaron, maybe you want to orient everybody to what we're talking about today.
We are talking about, Jack, the rise and fall of American growth.
And, small topic.
Yes. A new book by Robert Gordon. There was a great review in the Sunday Times magazine by Adam Davidson. Adam is the founder of Planet Money, one of my favorite radio programs on all things money and all things kind of economic. And, you know, reading through the paper, looking at this review, I came upon this quote that, you know, he shares basically. He says, Gordon concludes that despite all the upheaval of the past 200 years, there have really only been a handful of fundamental steps forward. Electricity, the telephone, the combustion engine, mass production, indoor plumbing, the conquest of infectious diseases, and the computer. He argues that everything else, including the internet and smartphones, is simply a variation on these themes. And that for all of our 21st century talk of innovation, in quotes, the pace of real transformative innovation has radically slowed during the past half century. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, could this be true? And of course, you know, when we look to answers on life's greatest questions, we search our Rolodex of Heritage Radio Network hosts. And Jennifer, who hosts Tech Bytes, of course, was top of mind because here's a person on a weekly basis who's thinking about tech and innovation and food systems way more than us. Her show's live every Monday at 1 p.m. And she's had a ton of guests on talking about all different aspects of tech and innovation. So, Jennifer, what do we think about Gordon's assertion? Like, how do we feel about this article? Would help land us in a good spot for the food folks?
Well, I think the first thing when you look at Gordon's book and then the review of the book is that Gordon is talking about a very specific equation. He's talking about technology equaling an increase in productivity, which means people working more, which then means an increase in money, earning more, which then means sort of a greater quality of life. And a lot of the things that the article cites in terms of growth and productivity, you know, we think about the industries that spring up around these kinds of things, the ability of people to work a longer day. That's what electricity means. It means more machines and things like that. But electricity also meant that instead of your day being sunrise to sunset, your day was now 24 hours, and our day has been potentially a 24-hour workday for a long period of time. So he's talking about something extremely specific, productivity. He's also layering computers and the internet and the smartphone all together as a big lump, and I don't know if I necessarily agree with that in its entirety. I think if you're measuring the progress of society in chunks of economics and productivity, that's certainly one way of doing it. But the interesting thing when we look at the food space and how tech impacts our food space, productivity and business is definitely a component of it because we talk about needing to produce food efficiently or more food to feed the world. We talk about the economics of it. How can we do that economically? How can we do that in a fair economy so people earn the proper wage for raising good food, but it's still accessible for the public to be able to purchase that food? So productivity and economy kind of cycles around food as well. But I think one of the key components that this is not addressing is in today's 21st century connected lifestyle, one of the things that people are desirous of going back to is almost that pre-electricity lifestyle. A lot of the technology that we see now is enabling us to have more free time. And in essence, a lot of the tech trends are based around convenience and ease of use and making life really easy for people so that we can get back some of that time And instead of putting that time into a classical productivity, which this article is talking about, which basically means work, people are taking that time to bake bread at home, to share a meal with people, to go shopping, to go kayaking, to spend more time reading, more time in the world, maybe, you know, creative endeavors that aren't necessarily a part of the economic productivity system. So in this construct of technology advancement equals more work, more productivity, more dollars, yes, perhaps we're not seeing, you know, the big spurts of growth in that specific equation. But I think society as a whole, especially in America, people are interested in having technology work for them so that they don't have to.
Yeah. So I'm like, and we want to get more into like our Netflix and chill vibes.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, a lot of the, you know, in the food tech space, a lot of the things that we talk about on Tech Bites are essentially marketplace platforms where it makes it really easy for people to acquire all kinds of food, whether it be food delivered to your home as a raw ingredient, food delivered to your home as mise en place, recipe prep, food delivered to your home actually prepared and hot and ready to eat, a reservation to go eat at a restaurant, a way to pay for a reservation, a way to make a reservation, a way for the restaurant to streamline your experience. So not all of that is necessarily productivity. For the consumer, I'm not buying productivity. I'm buying time and experience.
Yeah, I feel like we, you know, we shared this article with a lot of folks on our team and people had really strong reactions. Jack, I mean, what were your thoughts upon reading?
I mean, I felt like the big thing that was missing here is the access to information that the internet affords us. And I think that can lead to both productivity in the short term and the long term, right? Because, I mean, education and information is more available and readily available than it ever has been before. So to say that the technology of computers and the internet is the same thing, like, completely misses that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point, Jack, one of the famous, you know, often quoted philosophies about the internet comes from Steve Case, who is the gentleman who started a little company called AOL, and he's essentially considered, you know, like the father of the internet. He talks about the internet growing in three stages, that the first stage was actually building it, building the internet, building the infrastructure, and connecting people. The second stage is building on top of that internet, so giving people the access to information that you're talking about, which from his point of view, the first 10 years of the internet was just creating the information highway. The second 10 years of the internet, which is the period we're coming out of now, where people built stuff on top of it, all the information, Wikipedia, Heritage Radio, you know, iTunes, all that kind of stuff to give people access to the information. He believes that the third period of the internet, which is the one we're moving into now, is when we start to see the innovation and the disruption and then integrating all of that, all of those services and all of that information kind of seamlessly into life. And so from his point of view, the third stage of the internet, which we're doing now, is the time when we start to see the big changes that are going to happen in business and then trickle down. If we change the way we do business, then essentially we change the way we live life.
So I know folks want to stay kind of up on this topic and really go a little bit deeper into the food and tech conversation. They can obviously search the Tech Bite archives. But what's coming up next week? What should folks be looking forward to, be tuning into you for in the near future?
Well, we try to focus our tech around food. So that can mean that articulates itself in a lot of different ways. What we have coming up over the next couple of weeks, we have Tasting Table, which started off as a little internet email service and is now a really large platform for sales and information and services. And they, even though they are tech media, are having a tech month. So it's kind of interesting to see a tech company and a tech publisher, the way they look at food in the tech space. So we have the editor coming on, and then the week after, we have one of the founders of an organization called Journée, which is a restaurant industry group that you join that basically has classes and education and mentorship for people who are already on the, in the business, who are looking to navigate through a lot of the new trends, many of them technology-based, navigate through learning more about wine, learning about real estate, learning about social media, so that they can sort of further their career in the industry. Because there's been really a breakdown in the restaurant industry, which I think people talk about a lot when they talk about there are no good cooks and restaurants are having problems. There's kind of been a breakdown in the apprentice system and in the learning system. You know, a lot of that with, you know, greater opportunity or greater information that we do get from the internet. Instagram lets people in New York City see the feed of the best restaurant in the world in Copenhagen, and then people think they can make that food, and so they do. Mm-hmm. So there's the, you know, the internet and technology has created sort of a fast track to some things, but along the way, one of the things that we're losing a little bit is the artisanal quality, the apprenticeship quality of learning a lot about your craft from other people and then forwarding your career. So Journée is a really interesting thing, and it doesn't seem like it would be a technology-driven endeavor, but it is structured to be basically broadcasting classes and seminars via internet and on-demand via video and things like that, so that regardless of where you live, you can learn from, you know, thought leaders and leaders in your community and then, you know, sort of forward your own business. So it goes back a little bit to what you were saying, Jack, that you really can't discount the power of information. And that's definitely something that is important for the food tech space. And I think the food space in general, which is why we have Heritage Radio. It's all about the platform for the information and the discussion and the conversation and the points of view. And we're actually a tech, food tech business also.
Aha, we have come full circle. Jennifer,
there you go.
Thank you so much. It was great getting a little bit more insight and some thought leadership on this topic. And if folks want to find out more, definitely check out Tech Bites Live every Monday at 1 p.m. You can also find Jennifer on the internet, on Twitter. She's at TechBitesHRN, so follow her there for more shout-outs and thoughts. And I think that's a wrap for the breakdown.
Thanks so much, Jen.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
And with that, we move into the big ups section of the show. And this is where we like to do exactly what the title suggests, big up people. And the song is by Big Ups, the band. And first, like, preliminarily, big ups to Jen for that segment. Like, that could have gone on for an hour. Easily.
Oh, man. Yes, she is the move. I'm a big fan of that show. I think probably one of my favorite episodes is when she has the folks from IBM on to talk about Watson, the computer that they built, who is like a recipe savant. It's like so wild. It's so fun. My big up this week, though, actually kind of is also tied to Jen, who is the woman who got me into Muay Thai and training over at the Henzo Gracie Academy. And it is a big night for the Academy. It's Friday Night Fights here in New York City, one Friday a month, our Muay Thai fights. And we have six fighters on the card tonight. The event is going to be held up at Lucky Strike, which is oddly a bowling alley. So I'm not sure how we're going to do Muay Thai fights in a bowling alley. But I want to give big ups to all of the crew from Henzo are going to be fighting tonight, and in particular to Ann Lieberman, who is a longtime supporter of the network and is fighting tonight. A general all-around badass. I ran into Ann in the locker room earlier this week as she was, you know, coming off a little bit of a weight cut exercise. It's one of those things, thinking about fighters and food and making weight, and watching Ann pull her water bottle out of her locker and drink water only to a prescribed line, because she had seven pounds to lose between then and then the weigh-in that happened last Thursday. You know, you really start to think about the physical and the mental game that these fighters are bringing to their practice and to their craft. And I am just like continuously like so impressed. She's an instructor at the academy. This is her 8th fight. I cannot wait to cheer her and the rest of the Quran. So big up to the Henzo Gracie team, and I will see you guys tonight.
Nice. I will give a big ups. This is very, very, very biased, but I'm going to give a big ups to Two Boots Pizza, who... So two pieces of info here. They hosted our Saxelby Scholars celebration last afternoonish around 4 o'clock in the Upper West Side, and apparently that went very, very well. So we thank them for that. My girlfriend, it's also her family business. They are awesome, though. If you're a New Yorker, you've probably tried Two Boots. The idea is the Two Boots of Louisiana and Italy, so kind of like Cajun-Italian fusion. They were the first restaurant in the East Village that was kid-friendly, so they opened in 1987.
I know, I can't. 87, man.
Yeah, whew. So that's, I mean, the East Village was really a scary place back then, and of course there were a lot of great artists. It was like the time of Keith Haring and Basquiat, and it was just this really vibrant place and community. And all these artists, when they started to have kids, they really had nowhere to bring the kids. That was not like a dive bar, you know? So Two Boots opened in the East Village and has now gone on to, they have over, I believe, 20 locations nationwide. They're in Nashville, they're in LA, Baltimore, opening in DC, and Connecticut, all over the place. So friends of the network, thanks for the support, and just wanted to give them some big ups.
I second your big ups.
Awesome. Well, this was a fun one. I'm going to chill this weekend. I think you're chilling this weekend, right? Is this your low key weekend?
I'm going to try. There's a lot of things. The baby showers, the party, birthday parties, the whatnot. Yeah. I'm like, y'all want to just do them in my apartment?
Life does not slow down. Does not slow down.
Good problems. Happy problems. Happy to have them.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for joining us for this week in review. We hope we kick your weekend off the right way. And if you ever want to get in touch or have us discuss things or stop discussing things, email us info@heritageradionetwork.org, Twitter, @heritage_radio. Same handle on Instagram if you want to see what we're visually up to, and Heritage Radio Network on Facebook. Again, this is available in iTunes and Stitcher and most other places you can find podcasts. So subscribe and review us in the store and share with a friend. And we'll see you all next week.
Whew.
Bye.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.